Okay, so picture this. You're a law student, you're knee-deep in contracts, and you start wondering what happens to all that fine print in a contract when the main deal is over.
Like, what happens if a lease runs out, but there's still a fight about damages or.
Right, or something more relevant to us. What if you've got a contract with a clause about attorney's fees and that contract ends, but then bam, a lawsuit hits the fan?
Who pays for the lawyers then?
Exactly.
That's the kind of legal mystery we're diving into today.
It is, and it all starts with this case, Oral Roberts University v. Anderson, or ORU v. Anderson.
This case is a gold mine when it comes to understanding how certain parts of a contract, those little details about who pays legal bills, can actually stick around even after the contract itself is technically dead.
Okay, so to get us started, we've got a bunch of materials to work with. I've
Yeah.
got some general guidance on how to analyze a case like this, a super detailed case brief laying out all the facts and what happened in court, and even an actual legal brief with the main arguments.
Oh.
Our mission today is to break all that down for you. Distill the key legal principles at work in ORU v. Anderson, especially these fee-shifting provisions and what happens when someone transfers their rights under a contract.
Yeah.
We want to make these ideas crystal clear and actually useful.
Absolutely.
So, where do we even begin with all
Well,
this?
let's start with the basics, the facts of the case.
Okay.
Imagine it's 1994. Oral Roberts University, ORU, signs this option and agreement for purchase and sale of real estate with a guy named Travis Anderson.
Okay.
Basically, this agreement gave Anderson the exclusive right for a certain amount of time to decide if he wanted to buy some of ORU's real estate in Tulsa.
So, a pretty typical real estate option agreement.
Yeah.
What were the key parts of this deal that we really need to focus on?
There are two really important pieces here. First, Anderson paid a $2 million non-refundable promissory note to get this option.
Okay.
It was like a deposit to have this exclusive opportunity.
Right.
The second important part is what the agreement said would happen if Anderson decided not to exercise his option. In that scenario, ORU would give back the $2 million promissory note, and both sides would be released from any further obligations.
So if the option wasn't exercised, everything was supposed to be squared away nice and clean.
Right,
But
exactly.
I'm guessing there's more to the story.
Oh, there's definitely more. This is where Section 13.2 of the agreement comes in. This is the section about attorney's fees.
Okay.
It said very clearly that if there was any lawsuit related to this agreement, the winner, the prevailing party, would be able to recover their reasonable attorney's fees from the loser.
The classic loser pays clause. That can definitely up the stakes in a dispute.
You're sure?
Now, I also see that Anderson didn't actually hold on to this option himself the whole time.
You're right. Shortly after making the deal with ORU, Anderson assigned all his rights under the agreement to a new company called Metroplex Properties, LLC.
Okay.
So basically, Metroplex took over Anderson's position when it came to the option to buy the property.
So Anderson hands off his option to Metroplex. What happened next? Did Metroplex actually buy the property from ORU?
Nope. The option period ran out and Metroplex chose not to buy.
Okay.
Now, remember what we talked about earlier. If the option wasn't exercised, the defendants, in this case Anderson and Metroplex, as Anderson's assignee, they were supposed to sign a release,
Right.
officially letting ORU off the hook for any remaining obligations under the agreement.
Makes sense. So the option expires. ORU returns the $2 million note like they promised, but Anderson and Metroplex don't sign the release that was supposed to end things for good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's where the trouble started.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a recipe for a lawsuit.
It was. In June of 95, ORU filed a lawsuit.
Okay.
Now, they weren't trying to force the sale. At this point, the option was long gone. They were looking for something called a declaratory judgment.
A declaratory judgment.
Basically, they wanted the court to officially say what the legal rights and obligations of all the parties were under this now expired agreement.
So they wanted to clear the air legally, make sure everyone was on the same page. Makes sense. So how did Anderson and Metroplex react to this? Did they just agree to go along with it?
Not even close. They fought back. They filed counterclaims against ORU.
Counterclaims.
Yeah, they claimed things like specific performance, meaning they tried to force ORU to sell the property, even though the option had expired.
Wow.
And they also claimed breach of contract, saying ORU had somehow violated the agreement.
So what started as ORU wanting a simple legal clarification turned into a full-blown legal battle.
It did.
So the case goes to court, and the first big decision was on these initial claims for declaratory judgment, specific performance, and breach of contract.
Right.
What did the court decide?
The district court sided completely with ORU. They granted summary judgment in their favor.
Okay.
This meant the court said, based on the facts and the law, ORU wins without needing a full trial.
Wow.
The court found that the option agreement had expired according to its own terms, and because ORU had returned the money, they had fulfilled their obligation.
Okay.
Anderson and Metroplex's counterclaims were thrown out.
So a clear victory for ORU on the main points of the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Case closed. Everybody goes home happy, right?
Well, not exactly.
I didn't think so.
Right.
Because we're still talking about this case.
Right.
And you keep mentioning attorney's fees.
That's the twist. Winning the case was just the first step. After that, ORU filed a motion to recover their attorney's fees.
Okay.
They argued that as the winner, they should get reimbursed for their legal expenses based on Section 13.2 of the original agreement, the part about attorney's fees.
Okay, so this is where things get really interesting, and this is the big question for our listeners who are thinking about contracts. How could ORU even ask for attorney's fees when the court had already said the agreement was over? It seems like a contradiction.
This is where a really important legal principle kicks in. Some clauses in a contract, like those about fee shifting, can actually outlive the contract itself.
What?
It's true. It happens especially if the lawsuit is directly about interpreting or enforcing those contract terms, even if the main purpose of the agreement is done.
Okay, so let's break this down. How could a clause survive the contract? How did the court justify awarding these fees when the agreement was essentially over?
The court's logic was pretty clear. They pointed out that the whole reason ORU went to court was to get a legal declaration about their rights and obligations under the option agreement.
Okay.
And to confirm that it had expired according to its own terms.
Right.
To quote the court directly, plaintiff at all times relied on the terms of the agreement and the expiration of the specified option period.
So ORU wasn't making some new unrelated claim. They were fighting about the meaning and effect of the expired agreement itself.
Exactly. Yeah. They were basically saying, hey, look at the contract we all signed. It clearly says when the option ends.
Right.
And the court also pointed out that the wording of the attorney's fees provision in Section 13.2 was very broad.
Okay.
It applied to any litigation connected to the agreement without limiting it to the time before the option expired. This broad language helped the court decide that the fee provision applied to this dispute, even though it happened after the option expired.
Okay, so it sounds like ORU is probably going to get their legal fees covered. But what about Travis Anderson? He assigned all his rights to Metroplex.
Right.
Does that mean he's totally off the hook for these attorney's fees? This seems like the second big legal concept we need to unpack.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This gets to the heart of the difference between assignment and delegation in contract law.
Okay.
When Anderson assigned his rights under the agreement, specifically the option to buy the property to Metroplex, that didn't automatically transfer or eliminate his duties or obligations under that same agreement.
So even though Metroplex was now the one who could potentially buy the land, Anderson still had some responsibilities from the original deal.
Exactly. That's a really important distinction.
It is. So for Anderson to be completely free from all his obligations, including potentially having to pay attorney's fees, if the lawsuit went against him, something more would have been needed.
Got it. That something is called a novation. Yeah, sometimes that term can sound a little complicated.
Yeah, a bit.
Think of a novation, like a brand new contract that replaces one of the original parties with someone else.
Okay.
Everyone involved has to agree to it. In this case, for Anderson to be totally free, ORU would have had to explicitly agree to release him from the original agreement.
Okay.
And accept Metroplex as the only one responsible going forward. The court specifically said there was no evidence that this ever happened.
So ORU never officially agreed to let Anderson off the hook, even after he assigned his rights to Metroplex.
Exactly. And the court put it this way, and this is another key quote, Mr. Anderson cannot delegate the duty to pay attorney's fees merely by making an effective assignment.
So just handing off his rights to Metroplex didn't mean he also got rid of his responsibilities from the original deal.
Precisely.
This is a really crucial difference. So assignment is about who gets the benefits or rights, and delegation is about who carries out the duties or obligations.
Yes.
And to be completely relieved of those duties, you usually need the other party to agree through a novation.
Exactly. You got it. And the ORU v. Anderson case shows us why understanding these differences is so important in real-world contract law.
It does. So for our listeners out there, especially those law students, What are the big takeaways from this deep dive into Oro UV Anderson? What lessons should they keep in mind as they learn about contracts?
I think one of the most important things, especially when you're writing contracts, is to be super clear about whether a fee-shifting clause is supposed to survive the end of the agreement.
Yeah.
Don't leave it up to interpretation. State it directly in the contract.
Absolutely. And when it comes to assignment, this case shows us how important it is to clearly say in the contract whether assigning rights also releases the original party from their obligations.
Right.
If that's what you want, you need to include language that specifically says there's a novation or a release of liability. Don't assume it just happens automatically when rights are assigned.
I agree. And another big takeaway is how much emphasis the court put on the actual words and intent of the contract. Even after an agreement is officially over its terms, can still control later disputes if the language is clear.
That's a good point.
The court in Oro UV Anderson really focused on what the agreement said and didn't say.
Yeah.
This shows how important it is to be precise when you're writing contracts.
Absolutely. So to wrap things up and give a clear outcome to this case, what was the final decision about ORU's request to get their attorney's fees?
The court ultimately agreed with ORU. They decided that because ORU won the lawsuit, which was directly about the option agreement, they could recover their reasonable attorney's fees under Section 13.2.
Even though the option had already expired.
Even though it had expired. And importantly, the court said both Travis Anderson as the original party to the contract and Metroplex Properties as his assignee were responsible for those fees.
Jointly and severally liable, meaning ORU could go after either Anderson or Metroplex or both for the full amount of the fees.
You got it. That's a big deal for Anderson, even though he had assigned his rights.
It is. It really drives home the point that you can't just walk away from your contractual obligations, especially those about potential liabilities like attorney's fees, just by assigning your rights to someone else without a formal release or novation.
Absolutely.
This has been a really fascinating look at ORU v. Anderson. It's a perfect example of how the rules of contract law, especially those about the survival of clauses and the difference between assignment and delegation, can have major real-world effects even after an agreement is officially over.
I agree. And since the court's decision in this case relied so much on the clear language of the contract, it makes you think about other common contract clauses that seem simple but could have surprising consequences for liability and termination if they're not written carefully.
That's a great point. It definitely gives us something to think about for future deep dives.
It does.